Hello, this is Daryl War for the August 2020 chit-chat. Somebody kind of requested it because I was working so hard on episode 22 that I kind of put a little something out on the weblog. Does anybody want me to just do something a little more generalized because I was getting tired and somebody actually did speak up? Yeah, sure. I want to hear you blar to blar again. Well, okay. Not sure what I can give you. It's been odd, but in other ways, it's been very enjoyable. I do love having my sweetheart at home, working from home, and we sometimes will butt heads get in each other's way, but most of the time, it's like, oh, this is nice having him so close all the time. With what's going on now. Yeah, it's like, wow. Being able to be there for each other is really, really nice. That was something I was thinking about, just because I figured maybe friends would be tuning in. Yeah, grown a beard and shaved it off, and grown a beard and shaved it off, and I think it's 4 beards by now. I'm not sure. I thought maybe it was 3, but I was rereading an oldish letter to one of my cousins, and when I was kind of doing the math, I think that's 4 beards. And they're all, like, lighter in shade than once upon a time, of course. So, yeah, and the letter's really nice. Getting help getting to the post office, getting help getting groceries. But yeah, getting the letters. Oh, again, any pen pals listening, let me know. Thank you so much. And finally heard from Warren. I was like, writing him back. He lives! Because he's been working hard on his fiction, too. What else? Yeah, a lot of people where I'm just like, you're alive! You're alive! And every once in a while, I'm so sorry I didn't get back to you sooner. I'm like, with what's going on? You gonna apologize for that? Aye, aye, aye. But that's the thing, what I noticed, even with Hidden Object, just all kinds of folks, the kind-hearted people, they really do presume their good behavior is not as good as it should be. And I just think, oh my gosh, no, I value your sense of good manners and the concern that you ought to do better when, to me, it's gold and silver combined. It's just whatever the highest grade is, it's like, wow. Finally, really putting the most of my focus on good friends who know how to behave themselves and feel that they ought to do better, as opposed to getting the hypnotism of rewards for hate speak, rewards for jumping to conclusions about stuff and all the gossip and all that. And yeah, so yeah, just the company is wonderful, getting away from the nonsense, getting away from the crazy, and getting away from the feeling among people that they have become incredibly dependent on these commercial social websites, which, there was a podcast by Your Undivided Attention, and Harris had labeled it was more attention casinos, and I was like, oh yeah, that's a good way of describing it. Attention, I was saying social casinos, but yeah, attention casinos where it's like, no, you don't. If it's supposed to be a choice to use these products, then you should be able to have full range of your decision-making skills. And that's not how those things work. They give you notifications. They put you into a news feed where they're deciding what you're going to pay attention to and not yourself. Just the feeling of dependency people get on that stuff and expecting you to follow suit. And I was like, no, I'm not interested. There's very little choice or decision-making skills about those products. And hopefully, by this time, since many people were using them less often, having to stay at home and go out less and maybe use those things more, thinking that's how you're going to keep in touch, hopefully it has dawned on a lot of people what I went through and what other people like me have been going through. Because, yeah, when you're left with nothing but that, that's when it starts to hit you how bad those designs are. There's very little communication, actual communication, going on. In fact, the one pen friend who was saying that she couldn't bother using them anymore because they were just feeling overburdened with too much doom and doom and doom, and having friends get upset, well, now I can't get in touch with you. And I told her, well, if they can't dial a number on the telephone to get in touch with you, then there's something really wrong. It's in no way your responsibility to use these products when there are a ton of other ways that people have been raised to get in touch and keep in touch. But anyway, yeah, so back to the purpose of this entire show, which was a radio drama relief series for the 1960s soap opera Dark Shadows, including a whole lot of other characters. That's how we changed the format from a daytime drama to a humor mystery serial. And bringing in the Jennings now with the, it was based on in the show, The Turn of the Screw by Henry James and whatever they can find on werewolves, we bring in the Jennings. And so the thing is, with the Jennings, they have not quite figured out. They're no longer in a soap opera. Let's go, so I can probably think of to go through just like 20, 21, and 22, just to try and keep on the focus of chronologically and linearly where we are going. So with 20, we have Amy arriving at the Great House of Collinwood, and Carolyn and Dr. Hoffman trying to figure out, well, what do we do now? Knowing, oh yeah, there's something else that I need to remember. In the actual Dark Shadows show, there was a scene in which Amy and Barnabas had previously met at Wincliffe, so they knew each other. And it didn't really get explained. Not much. It just sort of got established, okay, they know each other, and Amy's like, oh, I missed you, like, you were so cool, da-da-da-da, you know, not in those words. And so I'm like, oh, just do the same thing. Just do where they know each other, you don't know why. I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to have to set that up. Maybe I'll add a little something. But it was just kind of out there. And that was the nice thing about the Jennings. There's a lot of the reacquaintance. There's these reacquaintances going on where the original acquaintances we didn't see on screen. So even to, you know, Carolyn knows Chris, Maggie knows Chris, and for some reason, Barnabas knows Amy. So I'm like, let's go with it. Figure that out somehow. And I haven't put anything together where Barnabas and Amy are talking, but so far what I do have, Barnabas isn't giving away that he doesn't know Amy. So, episode 20, we've got another Addams Family scene, and it got kind of odd, and I was like, I had to set it up that way, because that is just the way Gomez is. You have to try and figure out how are they going to talk to each other where they're going to sound like themselves. And at certain points, Gomez doesn't seem like he's quite getting through to Peter, but and Peter doesn't seem like he's quite getting through to Gomez, but somehow it works. Somehow it works out. And then just a kind of a catch-up between Maggie and Barnabas as Sarah is going off to have a think. Then Maggie goes back to the Great House, becomes reacquainted with Chris, and asks something out of left field even for Chris. And that's when I got, in episode 20, Captain Daniel Grigg and Sarah Collins, the ghosts thereof, re-meeting. It was wonderful. I got kind of the same responses from two different people, Melissa being one of them, is that it's almost like Sarah's got this father figure sometimes now with the ghost of Captain Grigg. And that he's reassuring her that she's surrounded by friends, so David getting distracted with somebody new is not a big deal. And it's, I still love it. Then we're back to Maggie and Chris. She's trying to get him out of the soap opera mode. Come on, just let me know what you're going through. There's something more going on than just being sort of a drifter who can't take care of Amy, except to kind of throw money around. Carolyn walks in. And that's when Chris goes up to see Amy, that's where Carolyn and Maggie really catch up, and they catch up with what's going supernaturally. So Carolyn gets the goods that Maggie is a reincarnation of Josette. Well, I kind of suspected in a wild imagining, but now that I'm hearing it, it makes sense, because you couldn't be so cozy with Cousin Barnabas for no reason. Because Carolyn's already had to face and become comfortable with a ghost such as Captain Grigg and a lot of these other things happening. And in 17, her and Tony, you know, dodging the Shriners Parade, which I've been planning for years. I think just, you know, all kinds of wild stuff. She just goes with it. She just goes with it. Just like she's telling Maggie in episode 20, I grew up in this house. There's stuff going on, and maybe just talking about it is a better idea. And that's where it really starts, where Maggie and Carolyn become more working as a team here and there and getting a little closer. And I really, really dig it. So then we've got David and Amy going to the West Wing, fairly the same as in the original. And then Carolyn's talking to Tony Peterson. Carolyn and Tony still an item in the pit and likely to remain so. That's the plan. But because of that, we've kind of got to share helping Chris out. Not just Carolyn and Chris, it's Carolyn, Tony, and Chris. And then, you know, the blue whale stuff. And that would be the end of episode 20. So episode 21, what do we got? more Elizabeth and the ghost of Bill Malloy on the RMS Queen Elizabeth. They've never called it the QE1, but I kind of want to call it the QE1 just for the sake that it's not the QE2. As Elizabeth and cousin Lily from the Munsters, they're off to England to go find the potential father of Victoria Winters, and you know, Bill Malloy's ghost has shown up. Oh, that's the one. Okay, so 21 Up the Damn Staircase is where Bill is just going on about, like, this is what was going on, you know, in the first year with me, and how I passed away, and all these things. And some of it Elizabeth knows. And there are other things that Elizabeth doesn't know, as, you know, who's helping out the ghost of Bill Malloy, or who he's helping out, that were also ghosts, and who happened to be there as well. And he just, when he talks, he starts to presume, oh, she must know about the whole Maggie Josette thing, and she doesn't. And it's perfect because there she is on the boat. You can't run around the old house, great house, Evans Cottage. You can't do nothing. You know, you just have to digest it on the boat, on your way to another part of the world. But you do have an old friend to digest it with. And at some point, Bill realizes she doesn't know, so try to recognize what's going on with Liz and be that moral support, too. Then we're still on 21 here. Wafting towards evening, Maggie inquires of Bob at the Blue Whale what the recent news there is after the break-in the night before. Amy wakes up from, presumably, a nightmare about Chris, and David rushes in. That's where he says, well, to get your mind off it, why don't we go to the West Wing? Ah, and then there's going to be that big meeting at the old house, about 6 people, so we hear Maggie and Barnabas getting prepared for that, and then Willie and Wadsworth kind of update each other before Dr. Hoffman and Professor Stokes arrive. Then they arrive, and they have this discussion over how to handle Chris Jennings, and Maggie's suspicions about Chris, and things that went on, just this is what happened at the Blue Whale, and it's just a lot of fun, and, you know, some romance a little bit between Dr. Hoffman and Professor Stokes. Where Julia points out, hey, you know, I'm allowed to have a little romance. Yeah. Then jumping over to Morning Glory Circle, that's the first Darren scene, where Samantha's coming in to say, hey, honey, I gotta go to Maine for certain reasons. And at first he's like, oh, this topic, yet again. But then when he finds out where she's going, he's like, oh, hey. And she's like, uh-oh, this is not what I expected, okay. Then Amy and David explore the West Wing. They happen upon many curious objects, including a very old telephone. And that's when Quentin's kind of salted in, and then they kind of rush back to Amy's room with the book of the family history. Heaven knows where that came from. And Roger interrupts and, like, aren't your children ever going to bed? And that's kind of the end of episode 21, Up the Damn Staircase, that some of you have already enjoyed. Let's see. Where are we? Aha! So now I'm still working on the audio for 22. The Endless Night at Collinwood. It's definitely, that's the, for 22, that's the title we definitely have, because yet again, Amy's going off to this West Wing, and it's like, we were already there. Then back to Amy's room, and a little attempted seance of Quentin's ghost, which ends up being the governess coming back. In this case, it's Maggie and not Victoria. More or less the same thing happens, but Maggie's there anyway, or instead. So she's explaining things a little bit differently than Victoria would have done, or does in the original series, about knowing Chris and that kind of thing. Ah, now this is interesting about 22. It's sort of in the middle of the night, Sarah goes, and wherever Barnabas sleeps as a pseudo ex-vampire, she goes to his room. And I'm not sure if I even, yeah, it seemed like I came up with this before really processing what Amy was going to do. So it's kind of the same, where little girl jumps on a bed, but this is Sarah and Barnabas. And Sarah's trying to warn Barnabas about stuff, and then, you know, it's really nice. But then the next thing we know from more based on original is Amy, you know, going to, you know, jump on Maggie's bed because she's hearing the widows and she's going, what's going on with that? And because it's not Victoria and it's Maggie as Josette instead, it's like, well, what are we going to do with that? So Maggie makes up some story that, you know, Helena's like, oh, Maggie, that was a cop-out. And it's like, well, yes, it's a cop-out, because why do you want to worry this little girl even more with gloomy tales about the widows? Somebody's going to die. And Maggie as Josette, she knows that ain't true. They're just boohooing because they boohoo. Or they like to, you know, they're cranking the wind machine. That's what they're really doing. They're just like being Spooky and Crank of the Wind Machine, they got other priorities, and she goes to find out what those are. But she still got to sort of re-register who these old girlfriends are. And so as she's remembering and explaining to them that she's remembering, there's just all this stuff. So one of my favorite things, that's just getting that scene accomplished. I'm just like, yes, this is where I wanted to go. And I was letting Helena know, I'm like, to boldly go where even Bella Heathcote's Josette has never gone before. That's the fun I'm having with that. And making it spooky. And yeah, there's just so much going on that I'm like, it's okay. You know, you're not. Because Helena wasn't feeling good. And I was like, nah, it's okay. Because there's a lot going on. And this is just kind of the first run of establishing what the scenes are and how they're going. Ah, and so, yeah. From 20, we had Carolyn and Maggie catching up with each other about this is what's going on supernaturally. And so now, in 22, what I'm loving is the continuation of that teamwork. So when Maggie's coming back in, Carolyn's coming back from the bathroom, and it's like, oh, what are you doing? And da-da-da-da-da. And really exciting. And at some point, Carolyn says, maybe we should just start calling you Josette flat out. And Maggie's like, hey, no need for that yet. But yeah, I'm thinking also when I listen over what I've got for that scene so far, I should probably raise the pitch on Carolyn's voice just so there's more contrast between her and Maggie. I don't know, maybe I'll just run it by later and say, well, should I do that? I don't know. And then it's great because when Maggie gets back to bed and Amy wants to know, by that time she's been asleep, awake, asleep, awake, asleep, awake. So she wants to know what the story is. Maggie starts telling her and Amy just fades out, which is great. And she yawns like, keep talking, I'm listening. Like, okay, good, we just... Yeah, she could tell her about Hansel and Gretel and not even worry that Amy noticed any change in the story. And that's not what happens. It's just, I was just throwing that out there randomly. You know, just a bedtime story. Any old thing. Ah, yes. And the Addams Family scene for episode 22, which really gave me a lot of trouble after the fact, because I was like, those levels are not right. There's just technical troubles like, you know, stereo over mono. How the heck did that happen? Different things were feeding into two different ears, and the volumes were just off. And so I finally fixed that. I finally figured out how to fix that, and I'm like, okay, good. There's still a little clipping that should be done as far as little snaps in the audio, little things that I might be able to fix even more. But yeah, I said, trust the Addams Family to just be different and not give me online drama, but technical problems. And it's a game of Parcheesi, because that's in the list of the activities at the Addams Family house. And I felt kind of bad because somebody said, oh yeah, Fester could be in there and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh man, I didn't. There was too much. It's just Morticia, Peter, and Victoria playing Parcheesi while Gomez is on the phone. You have to hear all of that. And Lurch is in there. And I realized, oh, Ted Casty, I am not. So I do my best. I added a little effect that hopefully won't be completely unintelligible. Although I noticed that the effect that I gave Lurch, that's how he sounded to me on the show when I was little. I could not understand a word that man said. Had to keep on asking a sibling, what did he say? He was just unintelligible to me. I could not. It kind of scared me, too. My memories as a child, like when the Addams Family TV show was on. It's like, that guy. But it's just decades later, and I'm having to perform him, and it's funny just getting that flashback where, yeah, Ted Casty, you are not. You're doing your best with the knowledge you have as an adult, but as a child, that man was scary. And it sounded like he was reverberating anyway. You could not just, I did not understand a word the man said. I finally remembered that after all these years. My initial impression of Lurch on the Addams Family when I was very little. And then they work it out at the Addams Family. And what else do we got? Ah, Maggie coming to the old house to try and talk to Barnabas, but there are Willie and Wadsworth just hanging out as per usual. This is when Willie is starting to get more of the up and up of seeing that Maggie is the reincarnation rather than just being told maybe by Wadsworth about it. And it trips him out, of course. It is true. You weren't always playing around. That's like, oh dear. And I've always wanted to do a little catch-up between Maggie and Willie where she could explain it to Willie, where he could kind of calm down, like, yeah, you're actually getting it directly from the person, all the previous madness and the kidnapping and all that. Like, now you're actually getting from the source why these things are possible and from, you know, her directly as opposed to other people. and trying to work it out and digesting everything that's going on between the four of them, Wadsworth and Willie and Maggie and Barnabas. That's good, too, because Willie's been at Wincliffe for so long. Yeah, there's a lot of things that have changed that he just hasn't seen, so he's got to get caught up with a lot of this stuff. And, of course, that was why I kept him at Wincliffe longer. Oh, yeah, that was something I wanted to tell y'all. I was test listening 22. It's strange. It's had an effect because I get to the scene with Willie. And previous times, it's just like I'm trying to get him situated and done. But listening to the new stuff now, I'm like, wow, I was performing this character and John Carlin was still with us. But now I'm listening and I'm doing Willie's performance and I'm listening to his character the best that I can do. And he's gone. And I'm like, wow, it strikes me, you know, it's like this the other night listening and it's like, oh, it's Willie. It's like, you know, yeah, he's gone. But here I am still doing it, you know. I'm like, wow, it kind of just dropped on me the other night. I've still got Willie, but he who performed him so brilliantly is not with us anymore. So that is not meant to be said whatsoever. It just was sort of a profound moment that I had when I was test listening these scenes. Oh, wow. So yeah, because that was another thing that I thought about at the time where, you know, I'm performing Barnabas and I'm thinking it's no big shakes. And he was gone for a while when I started doing that, Jonathan Fred. So, oh gosh, I was just such a different person in 2013. Really was. But yeah, it's definitely different when you perform a character with the actor, you know, you weren't that invested as far as the way people in fandom sometimes get. But as I grew with creating the pit, it's like, wow, this is definitely a different feeling of having performed this character and the actor still with us. And then, you know. Don't know what else I could say about that. So, yeah, it's had an effect. Not sad, just really different. Ah, and then we get to, in episode 22, The Endless Night at Collinwood. Which, this is kind of not quite another endless night. We've already been through some of the endless night, and so this is just another night. Getting Professor Stokes and Dr. Hoffman and Maggie, because she gets word from the widows, yeah, ask Guy to do another seance so we can figure out this dude, these other ghosts. And Maggie still doesn't quite remember. Stokes is asking Maggie, do you remember who this person is from the 1890s? And she's like, it's like this bare glimmer that I'm getting. It's just not much. And then thankfully, we need another guy. And rather than, you know, like in the original Dark Shadows, it was Carolyn, Chris, Stokes, and I think Victoria, because it was about trying to get in touch with Jeff Clark / Peter Bradford. But in this case, they're just going straight for people in 1890. Quentin Collins. Gonna just shoot for that because Maggie overhears. That's who the kids were asking for. And that's why Stokes asks and Maggie says, yeah, I'm not remembering who this person is. It's like this bare chime. It's not like quite ringing a bell yet. And of course, and so then Roger comes in. So that's the other guy. And of course, that's a lot of fun. Just trying to figure out, like, what's Roger busy with and what's he going to complain about and what would he want a distraction from as far as the cannery and all that. Oh, man. Yeah, this is kind of strange just because he's talking about sardines and I've actually been eating some sardines lately. Like, wow, I don't think I inspired myself to do that. It was for other reasons, but there it is. Sardines in the show and sardines on my plate. There's a reason for that. I'm not particularly fond of sardines. So then it kind of goes through there. And then we've got Hoffman getting more of a spark regression. Just the influence of this seance setup. And Dr. Hoffman, she's coming through as Magda Ricosi. Then after that's done with, and Roger's just like, oh gosh, you know, I'm ready to go to bed now. That's when Hoffman and Stokes have their moment. And then Maggie leaves them alone. But she does bring the glass of water to Julia, and with that comes another moment that I'm really happy with. Yet again, too bold to go, where even Bella Heathcote's Josette has never gone before. You're playing with these things. And it's also nice because when I look over it, it is a slow manifestation of Maggie learning and relearning all these supernatural powers that she has as the reincarnation of Josette. And also being able to work with astral projection. So by the time we would get to the novel, she'd have all these things already in place, more or less. She's just testing them out now in the pit. So that's as we move along. But really, stuff that I wanted to get to years ago that's finally coming to fruition. With the help of good people who are doing what once upon a time was very natural, just talking about the story, enjoying the story, and that is what I am all about. It's strange now, and that's pretty much, you know, all we have for 22 there, but it's strange now just seeing the level at which so many people have become advertising machines. You gotta, check this out, check that out. And I can't say a word about it either because, oh dear, spoilers, and the terror of the spoiler, and it's going to be ruined. Well, I don't know. There's a whole lot that's already been ruined for me. As far as, like, enjoying a story. Everything getting politicized in fiction, and a majority of people trained to hate on it all, and factory, you know, go through. And it's like, this, once upon a time, this was leisure. This is what you enjoyed on your off hours. And we discussed the tale. Sometimes you discussed the technical aspects if you understood them. So the extent at which enjoying fiction has been ruined is beyond anything I've ever seen in my life with the manipulation of our social lives. Yeah, I'm so happy to have moved on and keep moving on. See, I like to talk about the story, and that's what a lot of y'all are doing for me, at least the people that I have close to me now. Just talk about the story. And you can talk about other stories. You don't have to just talk about the bit, but I know you can do it because you can talk about the other stories you're enjoying. And there's all this worry, like, spoilers, but I don't care. I'm too old to care. I've had a lot of escapism, and I've enjoyed the escapism, and I've had a good mom. I like to talk about the story. I'll talk about the story. And, yeah, that was how we would escape a lot of other madnesses and get certain morals from certain stories to deal with the madness of our lives. That was also quite important. Love going back to that. Lisa gave me a copy a while back, I hate to say years ago, but it might have been years ago, maybe two, of the old That Darn Cat that Grayson Hall was in. I could not believe how much I enjoyed that a few months ago. I was just glued. I didn't watch it all in one sitting. But I, like, you know, watched half of it and got back to the other half, and I was just like, wow. And I couldn't stop talking about it. Seamus came up, like, there was this and this and this, and he's like, Grayson Hall was in there? I was like, yeah. And then it's so funny, like, just, oh, man, just going on. I'm like, wow, that was such a good movie, and the dialogue was so good, and all these things that I grew up with as well. I was like, wow. And then it's funny, too, because it's like, oh, well, it's kind of touched by Dark Shadows, because Grayson Hall's the lady who gets kidnapped by the two thug guys, and, you know, that gets kind of dark. But then there's sort of peripherally a little Addams Family, because the guy who played Rocky, the beatnik, on the Addams Family is the boyfriend of Haley Mills' character. So, hey, it's not all, you know. And then the nosy neighbor, whoever she was, she was the classic Bride of Frankenstein from the black and white movie. So there's her, too. So you got a lot in there. All kinds of different things. Oh, golly, for another spooky, you know, you got Roddy McDowell, and he was in, I think, Fright Night and Fright Night 2. But, I mean, what wasn't Roddy McDowell in? And I don't know where they got that cat, but I do not believe there was any alternate when they were filming that cat. It always seemed to be the same cat. I don't know where they got that cat, but, boy, what a cat. And I was getting in touch with a potential new pen pal, who was good. She asked me, you know, what the drama was, and in one location or another location, virtual or physical. And I just wrote her back and sat down. It's not so much any drama in one particular zone. It's more just general drama people invent about me. And that many in our population are addicted to the commercial social networks. It tends to take a rather with it and wise individual who can maintain a lack of interest with that and see it, along with all the gossip, as the total waste of time that it is. So I was letting her know, I remember when going to the source was the height of rationality and logical fact-checking, but that doesn't happen too much these days. It's somehow more relied on to ask random strangers and third-party sources on a trendy social network about me than say, ask me about me. And I was kind of going down memory lane in my head, and I was like, yeah, you did do that years ago. When Warren Freeman left a comment on the weblog, and rather than me just going to a search engine to find out who he was, I contacted him directly by email and asked, "So, who is Warren Freeman?" His reaction, he was so in love with what I was doing, was just to be as well-mannered as possible. And I was impressed, and still am to this day. So no, I did not go online, per se, to search who he was. I asked him directly who he was. And after a while, we became pen friends, and I am very happy with that. I was happy to get his most recent letter of what he's been up to, and his news, and his response to my news, and all of those great things that I was hoping the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows would bring from people who enjoyed the show. And I'm finally seeing more regularly. Yeah, I didn't go looking on any kind of search engine. I didn't rely on any third-party source. I went to him directly. And that's nice. The other thing I was thinking about, talking to you all about, was something I had mentioned to Seamus recently, and he was very fascinated. It was alcohol moderation and how I accomplished that years ago. And because I did that, that helped me in other ways to pull away as slow as it took from the addiction to the commercial social media. So yeah, it worked out. So when, many years ago, getting away from the other crazy, the more physical life crazy stuff that was going on, I was really relying on the heavy whiskey and then later on brandy. So I was like, all right, you know, now I've gotten to a location, I can try to stop relying on this so much. It was really getting me through awful, but now I've got to figure out how to moderate this. And basically it was math. My husband and I, in order to get the full idea of what we would get into when we would make purchases, and we still do this, is look at the percentage. And it's like, so how much is this going to cost for how strong it's going to be, as well as enjoyable as far as flavor-wise and that kind of thing. So it's sort of price versus content. So as I had gotten away from that madness many years ago, it was 2007, 2008, I guess. So I would go to a store either on the weekends or after work. And since the hard stuff is like 40%, I would like look. I was like, well, the next step would be Jägermeister, because that's 35. And after getting through some of that for a little while, I'm like, okay, what's the next step down? Port. That usually runs somewhere between 17 and 19%. I'll go through that for a while. And then what's the next step? Usually sake, rice wine. That's tends to be 14, 15, sometimes 16. It varies, but you just focus on, all right, what's next? And then the standard wine, usually around 13%, next step. And then just beer and cider. And so then it just sort of stayed on that level most of the time. I was not perfect as far as the steps go, but that was the direction. Partaking was still going to happen, but focus on lower percentages, a step at a time. Sometimes you go up, sometimes you go down, but you just keep trying to focus on down and down and down and down. Yeah, and then it just kind of stayed there. And it was about January, I had a pen friend, who was trying to get a family member to drink more water. I'm like, you know, that sounds like a really good idea. I got to figure out how to do that, because I could definitely use a detox. I could definitely use going back to some more moderation here and just manage to hydrate more. And I figured out how to do that to where more often than not, I'm having water or herbal tea or something like that. And less alcohol. So that started in January. It's interesting because the schedule for eating and beverages and that kind of thing came about around the time that John Carlin and Terry Jones passed away. I've done that little tribute. So I can always sort of mark the new beginning at around that particular week. And it's really doing wonders for me. And some of the pen pals know more details about that. Yeah, it really helped. I just kind of looked into, well, what are my options for kind of detoxing and having more water and more herbal tea? Yeah, I found a schedule that really works for me. I'm very pleased with, and yeah, there's some good changes and a lot of appreciation for the results to degrees of unbelievability sometimes. It's like, wow, I cannot believe how good I feel. But there's also actual foods and choices, healthy choices that are involved as well. So you'll notice how I got the help I needed step by step, and even with all the baloney stigmatizing of me for admitted alcoholism, alcohol is regulated. There are rules for that. warning labels, age restrictions, just as there are for several other things like gambling and tobacco and even lighters. I'm sure you'll notice many appliances in your home have similar labels, but what does not currently have these labels is the commercially run social media. Social media has no warning labels currently, and very few age restrictions at all. But you might have picked up the most obnoxious part, and this is almost everyone keeps blaming themselves, or blaming bad apples, or those people for the horrors that happen. But what happens when something good does? People praise the company, whatever the brand name is. They will pretty much give all the credit to things like Twitter, Reddit, Tumblr, Fartbook, whatever the company name is. And all that is good comes from that company, rather than anyone using it. Very scary and dangerous habit there. When we make telephone calls, we're not often voicing the name brand of our telephone company, are we? We don't go on and on about how great they are. Well, if the lines are good, maybe we ought to. So, interesting that bad things are blamed on patrons and consumers, and the companies raking in the profit can somehow do no wrong. I'm still kind of with the bit of both for the Marina Sirtis interview, where brings out the worst in us, or gives the worst people a platform to express their hideousness. But yeah, brought out the worst in me, and that's why I had to get away. So yeah, I think that's about it. Hopefully, when I get through editing this, it'll be a good job just going through the steps of 2021-22. Very much looking forward to getting to episode 23 in the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. Just have to finish up 22 and just listen to the three set in a row to know where we are, where I am, where the characters are, what's the next step. Turn on some shows, maybe do some embroidery while I'm turning on the shows, just to let it feed in and find out what's happening in 23. So that I can create that or get started on creating that, make the demo, and then hopefully, you know, just keep on going and going and going up until the Leviathans and the cutoff point with our good doctor, the Time Lord. Oh, there's that too. Yeah, really. Oh, let's end on that note. Really good note to end on. We are watching the fourth Doctor, Doctor Who, and we have finally reached Romana, the first Romana, played by Mary Tam. Now, something on that particular DVD is commentary with Mary Tam and Tom Baker as you go through the four episode set of the Ribos operation. And wow, it is so good. Just listening to them talk over the episode and really fun discussion. You really don't know when they're being serious. It is hard to tell because they're just cracking jokes left and right. So wonderful. Yeah. That's something that I've been kind of listening to and embroidering to, and it is just, it's absolutely wonderful. The Ribos operation. If you can get the DVD that has the commentary on it, it's great to listen to. I'm so happy with that. And Tom Baker, he pointed something out with a age-old story that we've all heard about the Adam and Eve and the snake and apple and all that. And he had mentioned somewhere in there, I don't know why it came up at all, can't remember, and he was like, you know, the thing about that, I'm paraphrasing totally. He says, you know, the snake comes up to her to encourage her to eat this apple. You would think that Eve would turn to Adam and go, that snake just talked to me. The snake just talked. I loved it. It was wonderful. A ton of other things. I know that commentary is just chock full of so much fun. And I like Romana. It's a really neat contrast as opposed to Leela Warrior Princess, as I call her, or have called her, nicknamed her. With Romana, you get another Time Lord, kind of astute and a bit dressed up like Princess Leia in a lot of ways. That was something that Mary Tam did say, that when they were watching it together and doing their commentary, she was like, I wish I could have kept the tiara that she's wearing when you first see Romana. And she's like, I could have shopped at Tesco's with that. The very idea. Oh, there's a lot of stuff. So yeah, Ribos Operation, if you're interested, that commentary is so much fun. You probably want to watch the four episodes before you listen to the commentary with the four episodes, but yeah. Leela was great, and I'm having a lot of fun with the total contrast of Romana. A lot of fun. Neat things. All right. So, I do believe that is all. I hope all of you are doing very well. And my email address, xoisceythe@hotmail.com. Would love to get something other than spam. And I do. Or you could write me on paper if you've got the mailing address. So keep on keeping on. Stay safe. And take care.